Planet FM is a platform that champions diversity. Not all our programs reflect the views of the station. We encourage you to consider a wide range of information from trusted sources when making decisions about your health.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Green Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Green Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. If you've got a computer handy, quickly go up and do a web search for Russian dolmens. D-O-L-M-E-N-S, dolmens. Image search. This will tell you another story.
Kia ora and welcome. I'm Lisa Eyre and this is Green Planet FM. Today I have in the studio Tim Lynch. Yes, my boss on Green Planet FM. He has been away on holiday doing all sorts of exciting things. He's been to Russia. So we're going to talk about why he went, what he did there, and I think that this will be a very inspirational interview. Kia ora, Tim. Welcome.
Dobry den.
Dobry den?
Dobry den, Lisa. But first, I am not your boss. We are co-creators together. But thank you very much for that. Yes, I have been able to experience Russia for 1 month. And I went and lived with Russian people and experienced many, many wonderful times with them. But first, I flew from New Zealand through to Malaysia and then on to Istanbul. And from Istanbul, I had to go across the Black Sea to a place called Krasnodar. However, to get there, I had to fly all the way up to Moscow and then back down to the Black Sea to Krasnodar. So there was a lot of air travel that I didn't particularly like. However, it allowed me to get to Moscow, and I was able to quickly go into Red Square, photograph St. Basil's Cathedral. It's a fantastic art show, if ever there was one, and drive around the Kremlin a couple of times.
And you've been to Russia before. Have you been to Moscow before?
Yes, I had some wonderful events happen to me back in 1986 when I went there, where I synchronistically ran into Steve Wozniak of Apple Computer and also Leonard Nimoy, Spock of Star Trek, and also met the American ambassador to the Soviet Union not once but twice. So, yes, that was a very unique trip, and this one was very different but more profound because I was living and being with the Russian people.
So has Russia changed much since your original trip?
No doubt. Yes, it certainly has. They've freed it up a lot more. There's more colour, and the roads and the buildings, they're putting up a lot of apartment blocks all around Moscow. Even downtown Moscow, the business centre now is starting to look more like Los Angeles centre. And so there's a lot of building going on, a lot of motorways, and enterprise. There's a belief that Russia is going to do well in the future.
That's a wonderful thing to have, that belief. So, Tim, you went to Russia for a real reason. So when you left Moscow, where did you go to and why did you go there?
About 7 years ago, I first read a book called The Ringing Cedars Book. It's about this woman called Anastasia up in Siberia who lives with wolves and lives with bears and lives totally affiliated with nature. She actually has this ability to blend with nature. Often she was sort of went around naked because she could withstand the cold, and she was found by an explorer who wanted to go and obtain oils from the Ringing Cedars, and he met her, and a whole lot of books, 10, have come from him telling of this profound story about this woman who's supposed to be quite telepathic it has many other abilities that we still don't know much about. So I thought, well, the best thing for me to do was to go and check this out. And fortunately, I'd had a contact in Russia. His name is Yuri Smirnov, and I contacted him when he was living in New Zealand for a while. He has gone back to Russia, and he's involved in doing tours. And he said, Tim, I can assist you. And so I went down from Moscow to Krasnodar, which is a city about 1 million people. And from there, I went down towards the coast to a place called Shada, where a lot of these things called dolmens are.
Now, let's just do a little geography here. Anastasia's in the Siberia, but you actually went down to the Black Sea.
That's right, about 13 k's inland from the Black Sea. And the reason is, in a village called Shada, there are many, many dolmens.
And can you tell us what a dolmen is?
Well, a dolmen is a little building. It could be maybe 2 meters high by 2 meters by 2 meters. And it's made of stone. And the stone is sandstone. And this sandstone has got myriads and myriads of crystals embedded inside it. Anyway, so this is somewhat like a little house. But the sandstone is about, nearly half a meter in thickness. Sometimes one-third of a meter in width, and it's all walled in, and a very heavy, heavy roof of sandstone as well, and there's a little hole in the front, and it's about
big enough for a person to get into?
Just to wriggle into. And then there's also a stone cork that actually goes into it, or a plug. And from what we gather, these were made sometime about 7,000 and even maybe 8,000 years ago, because they say that there was an old Vedic civilization there. And, of course, the Vedas that we know about go back through the Hindu religion, right back to the Upanishads and before the Bhagavad Gita was written, way back. And this Vedic civilization supposedly was all over this area, and there are many, many dolmens all over that part of the world, all the way up through Europe and to Britain, and there's many in Algeria, and also 35% of the world's dolmens are in Korea. And so they're spread out over this vast area, and they're still wanting to work out what happens. But I was told by people who've had, shall we say, psychic experiences by standing or going inside them, that many of the elders of those times, at the end of their life, they would be put inside these dolmens where they would actually take their last breath. And they would be sealed in there, so it was totally airtight. And when you look inside the dolmen, you can see that they're just not slabs of rock sitting on each other. They're channeled. There's obviously some chisel work been done to make a fit that is essentially light tight. I wouldn't say airtight, but definitely no light. So that the bodies or the human beings were put inside, they were in darkness. And when they died, they supposedly left their imprint, their energy bodies. There's so many subtle bodies that you have. There's the physical body, the emotional body, the mental body, and then there are other subtle bodies like the astral body and the etheric body, and there could be many other bodies. So what happened was, and this is what they say, that when you were sealed in there, the only thing that could actually escape was your soul, that all your other bodies were essentially imprinted into the walls of that particular
incubator.
Yeah, this was an incubator of sorts. And evidently, many, many people who have gone in or stood around or meditated by have had presences and beings come to them telling them stories or opening up certain qualities within their being. To many people, it was a spiritual experience that they had. And many, many people now are coming to this place and looking and feeling and intuiting what really is happening. And it was interesting because in the Second World War, Hitler, he invaded that whole area as well. And his aim was to destroy all these dolmens. And there's about 3,000 in that particular area. 2,000 of them are intact at the moment, but many are destroyed or have been destroyed.
So when they put the dead bodies in there, they didn't leave the bodies there forever, because otherwise you'd have
stacked up bodies.
Yes. So they must have put them in there for a certain length of time, like there is a sort of symbolic idea of 3 days after you've died.
Expired.
And then they took them out again after that.
That's right.
Mm.
And put them in, I presume, a proper burial situation. Yeah, so this is what I went to experience. And I was very fortunate because the flat or the little house that I was staying at was only 100 metres from one called Mother's Heart. And so I used to go up there at night time. I went on a full moon. I climbed up on the roof and I lay there. And the most important thing that I had got from the books, of the Ringing Cedar books, was to go there and put my mental thinking side of me away. Put that aside and just go there and live totally in the moment, in the now, and live without thinking.
So you went up on the roof of that and you meditated.
That's right.
Could you get inside it?
That one was a very bit of a hard struggle. Yes, I could have. I decided that I wouldn't at that particular stage, but I used to sit right beside in the entrance, and that was a very different one because this was one gigantic rock that was actually carved out. And so all four sides and the bottom were carved out of this sandstone, and they had lifted about a 1.5 or 2 ton slab and put it on the roof. And so that was a very different. Mother Heart was like a womb, and many people who wanted to have children, wanted to get pregnant, would either go inside or camp around it.
Right. Because I had sort of visualised you sort of getting stuck, rather like Winnie the Pooh getting stuck in rabbits. I don't know if you know that story. I shouldn't go there. But going back to Anastasia, why did she direct people to go to the Dolmens?
I think it was in book 2, and also she again mentions it in book 4. She realised that our humanity at the moment is totally out of sorts. We have become so dysfunctional. We have lost our connection to nature. And because she was definitely dissolved into the Siberian wilderness, she could also be very focused. And she mentioned this in her discussions with Vladimir Meg, who was the author of these 10 books. And she said, there is one place in Russia at the moment that still holds the energy for our future. And she said, in many ways, way back then, they knew that there was a possibility that the world would change and we would lose our way, which we have.
You certainly have.
And so this is what she mentions as the place where we could go and retune ourselves, plug in to our deeper spiritual qualities, and essentially reflower the race and come into our own as a new planetary civilization.
So were there dolmens near where she was, or did she find those through astral travel?
Well, she's known to have many different qualities to the degree that she influenced people in Moscow, even though she was in Siberia, and she has this beam, that they say, or a particular ray. She's sort of so clairvoyant. And so this is one of the basic things that I had when I went to Russia. I pretended that she could read my thoughts. So I went totally innocent, totally pure in my thoughts to Russia to be able to experience what is. And so it was a great challenge for me to keep out of my head and to keep my thoughts really, really clear, being grateful, being thankful, and knowing that I was sharing breath with all the people in that surrounding area, in that field. Because as these sort of incubators were, it was about, I don't know, 40 or 50 in that particular 10 square miles or 10 square kilometres, I wanted to make sure that I did not cause any perturbance in the force, in the field.
Right. And you said about pretending when you went there, pretending...
She could read my mind.
Yeah, pretending she could read your mind. But in actual fact, maybe something of putting out an intention might allow that sort of thing to happen. Who knows? But I'm just going to go back to the dolmens themselves. How were they made all those years ago? Have they got any idea?
Not at all. Not at all. And we don't know if gravity had a different force way back then, because that was a time of Stonehenge. And that was also, well, we don't know about the pyramids, but we know that even up in Tibet, Bruce Cathy, the Air New Zealand 737 captain, who studied flying objects, he found out a certain amount of information how the Tibetans were able to shift rocks up the slopes of mountains to get to particular places. And there may have been another way of altering the polarity of what gravity was to allow the polarized gravity to repulse the stone and lift the stone up, and so that they could just guide it into place. We don't know yet.
Well, even these days, and there's stories, I know of one story in particular of a mother who lifted a truck to move her child that was underneath it. Sometimes amazing things do happen, but probably a little bit less these days than in the past.
Yes, well, sometimes when a mum is concerned about her child, great power, she can tap into huge amounts of power to do and make magic happen. But, see, one of the things was there that when I was reading these books about 7 years ago...
And I'm just going to say again, they're called the Anastasia books.
The series.
Yes.
Based on a Ringing Cedar series. I happened to be going to a Dance of Universal Peace down at Napier, and the only place that I could put my tent was in between two cedar trees. And I had a very, very profound dream that night. And two extremely important human beings on this planet showed up. And I'm not going to advance any more about it, but it was a great learning for me. And I took it that something else is going on. And many other people have had dreams, some of them quite prophetic, so that this is one of the reasons what actually drove me to go to Mother Russia. Anyway, so this is what happened. I went to many different dolmens, and there I met one young boy who was there, and he was lying on the roof of one of them, and he told me exactly where the energy was coming out. I couldn't feel it myself, but he said he had been at another dolmen, and he had this great being dressed in red show up for him. His eyes were closed, and a lot of information was conveyed to him by this great being. So all I suggest, if you are sensitive, please make the effort of going there, because virtually every person who goes there gets affected, if not instantly, a few hours later, a day later. What it did, it made me, well, melt more. It made me softer. It made me want to listen. And a few other things have happened as a result, which I will maybe convey at a later date. So, very important what happened there.
Well, I was just thinking about the young boy who said he could feel the energy. Have they been built on ley lines?
Well, this is one of the points that I first looked at, and yet they're spread out over a wide area. So I say that if it is like acupuncture meridians, that there's a whole group field that they are on. And whereas Cheops in Egypt and Stonehenge and the cathedrals throughout Europe are definitely on acupuncture meridians or nodal points. I was not aware exactly if they were in this particular instance. But they could be, because I just hadn't had contact with the people. All I can say is lots of people have very, very profound instances of spirituality.
That's really wonderful. So you went all the way over and you feel that it was well worth it.
It was something else out of the blue. Nobody has known anything about these. And I think the more refined your process, and if you've done a lot of inner work, there's a far greater opportunity for you to be able to tap into deeper levels of being and of knowing, and maybe coming away with your life's purpose. There are many, many stories that the Russians have themselves. And I saw one Russian woman, and she talked to the dolmen, and I could see her. She crossed herself as she spoke, and she had this loving reverence for the dolmen. And I turned around to her, and I said, gosh, I've been watching you for the last, you know, half hour. Your countenance on your face is just so soft, and you've got this wonderful smile and of contentment. And she said, yes, yes, I've had some major magic around these dolmens, so I am just thankful.
And, so, was this a Russian person?
And this was a Russian girl.
Because yes. There are not many tourists in that area?
I was told to come earlier. I went in at the end of May.
Before it got warmer?
And before they came in their thousands, yes.
Oh, so people are coming all the time from around the world?
There's over 10 million people, well over 10 million people have read these books. And so that's the draw card, particularly now that they've got tours around it. And so I spent time there, and Yuri, my guide, because he's very good at English, he told many, many stories. He could define words for me, make it very clear. And whilst we were there, we went to a town, and the town is Galenzik, which is a wonderful little town in a bay right by itself. It's like you'd think it was a caldera or a sunken volcano right on the coast of the Black Sea. Delightful place. We went there, which is about, I don't know, 45 kilometres from Shada village where I was staying by the dolmens. And this city was lovely. It was a spa resort, and many Muscovites and people from St. Petersburg or Leningrad used to come down to this place. And it was a place on the beach. And the parks were just wonderful for the kids. I was astonished. And as I walked around, I thought to myself, gee, boy, if I had to find a refuge from New Zealand or anywhere else in the West, I could go to this little city. It was quite delightful. And it was really interesting because about 1993, 94, just at the start of Anastasia's books, some spheres, transparent type globes, some seers turned up at this town, and they whizzed through the main square and they went straight into the council buildings where the mayor's office was. And it startled a lot of the councillors, and whizzed around inside, and the mayor and the councillors wondered where these seers had come from, and they'd heard about the whole story with Anastasia, and they came on board to a huge degree thinking, well, this is maybe a good selling point for the town. I'm not too sure, but this started the trend as Galenzik being the major city or town that allowed people to go for all these tours of the dolmens. So that was a lovely place, and the water was a little bit cool, but you could still swim there at that time because I was there at the equivalent of 1st of December. And if you go have a look at it, it's on the same sort of latitude as Timaru. So if you swim in the water in Timaru on 1st of December, you're pretty resilient. Anyway, not far from there also was a place called Beshetanin Children's School. This school is a very unique one, most probably the most advanced children's school on the face of our planet. And it was run by Professor Michael Chetanin. And when I was asked to go there, which only happened to be about 10 kilometres from Shada, where I was residing, I happened to also meet this professor. And when I gave him a hongi and told him a little bit about Māori and the third eye and shared breath of nose to nose, forehead to forehead, he got very interested in the Māori. And we talked more about it. And then I also told him a little bit about New Zealand. And I put it this way. I said, in many ways, New Zealand was the first country on earth to anchor the divine feminine having her say when in 1893, women obtained their right to vote. And I said, this was when the yin joined the yang for the first time in thousands of years. And he said, oh, boy, I'll have to have a... He didn't say boy. He said, oh, I'll have to have a good think about that. Which then engaged us in many other discussions about these 11, 12-year-old boys and girls who go there and learn about their cosmic inheritance. He takes them through the microcosm and the macrocosm, and they learn just about everything. to the degree that they'll do gymnastics, they'll do singing, they'll do dance, they'll do painting. They actually, the children all built and helped build this whole school. And, of course, they do the 3 R's, so to speak, arithmetic, writing and reading. And what he's plugging them into is to what is it to be a human living on a planet? And how do we co-create and cooperate in doing this?
The who are we and why are we here?
That's right. Who, why, where and how.
Yes.
Well, it's all. And I saw kids go up to him and they'd all go up and grab his hand and hold his hand and he would just give a hand a little squeeze and nod to them and say hello. But they revered him in many ways. And he was just a white-haired 68-year-old, I think, 68, 69-year-old, who was nice and tanned. And he took me to his office. He invited me and a number of others to his very spacious office. And he got out a piano, accordion, and he sang a song. And he talked about many things on how we can plug in to our inheritance. The way humans are living at this moment is totally out of accord with nature's process.
Absolutely.
Yes, and what he was doing, he was giving all these practical things to all these children that allowed them to divine a deeper quality in their whole being.
Well, it's wonderful that the parents were willing to send them there, because that just shows you there's a little bit of a different way of thinking. And I just wonder whether communism, which stifled religion, actually has allowed alternative ideas like this to blossom.
Well, there's many things. The Russian Orthodox Church, which has been going for 1,200 years or more, is such that they never burnt any woman at the stake as witches. All the burnings and the horror that went with it was part of the Spanish, Italian, French, English experience of Catholicism. Whereas in Russia, the woman's information, the woman's knowing, the woman's business has remained basically intact. And so there is another quality throughout the Russian way of life that has allowed women to also have their say, because they were the herbalists, they were the healers, the nurturers. And there's some very interesting information about how the Russians were always affiliated with Mother Russia. And the reason why they called Mother Russia is because that maybe 7, 8, 9 months of the year covered in snow, so there's that purity of white. And then when the snow melts, and then all the upwelling of nature as the green shoots and then the golds and the yellows and the reds and the blues, sort of Mother Earth thrusts her colours up to the sun. And they knew that rebirth, and that Mother Earth is giving us new life again. And they look around and they see the wolves having babies and the elk and the bears. Everything comes from a mother. And so that was why they have this great regard for the feminine, the mother. Yes, very interesting.
And I'm wondering about nature, because of course with all of that ice and snow, it kills off any bacteria, so each year you can start anew and grow things organically much more easily than in a warm climate like New Zealand.
There is that built into the whole ecology of how it all works out. Yes, so they can start again, and we're starting again. I won't get into this, but the Russians now are wanting to make Russia a GE-free country, but more so an organic country. They're going back to growing all over again. The Minister of Agriculture has decreed that the only way forward for Russia now is to go organic. Anyway, so to get back to this school, the kids learn how to grow things. The fact that they're totally engaged, I witnessed a number of classes. In one class there, they were making carpets, just like that you do in Persia or Turkey. and I saw them doing dance as well. But I went into a, what I'd call a geography class, and I watched the kids all working together. The teacher sort of tees it up, and then the children work. So they're learning and teaching each other. Very interesting dynamic here. But I noticed that in the geography, they were looking at the planet as a whole. We see the planet first as a whole, and then they can focus down. Whereas what we do in the Western world is we look at the small, and we usually focus only on the small. We don't see things in a holistic context. We don't see the geosphere, the biosphere, etc., all working in unison, you know, the web of life. And so the children were getting a big picture viewpoint. And, of course, then there's the whole thing of health. They're involved in cooking their meals. They live in, there's about 10 beds to a dormitory. I went inside, pretty flash, very nice. And so they've got all these facilities, and they don't need to go around having iPhones and technology. They're not watching YouTubes and God knows what else, because the school of life essentially has awoken them to the realization that we're embryo gods, and we've been locked down in unknowingness solely because the so-called teachers of today and yesterday and the years gone by have not seen the big picture. They've done their best, but their best has been limited, and we've been conditioned to be gods of limitation when in actual fact we're embryo gods. You are listening to Lisa Eyre interview me, Tim Lynch, on my recent journey into southern Russia and of my experience of spending time with Russians, seeing how they live, finding that living with their families and being with them is a very, very wonderful and profound experience. So please continue to listen on. We've been conditioned to be gods of limitation when in actual fact we're embryo gods.
Well, that's a profound statement, Tim. I think I'll go back to the school, and I gather it was a boarding school, was it?
It was, yes. People from all over Russia come there, and now the Russian government has seen it as such a good example of schooling that it's state-sponsored now.
Oh, wonderful.
So when it's state-sponsored, that means there are some very key people through different layers of government right up to the Kremlin who are saying, this place has to continue. Yeah, so this was a superb experience for me, and I am in discussion with them at this moment about certain things that we trust can make happen so that we in New Zealand can have a relationship with the school.
And perhaps the Steiner School could expand a little bit.
That's
how
right.
They do things?
Most definitely. I mean, if a Steiner child went to the school, they would expand in so many different other ways, particularly to be engaged, to really be in the present, live in the moment. And what these kids are doing, they're finishing school, they can do a university degree, and by the time they're 16, they've accomplished that. They learn so much so fast, and they want to learn. The more they find out something, the more they want to find out more.
I think that that's the key. I think, in fact, that our children learn incredibly slowly. I mean, when I was a child, actually, in England, I was doing age 11 what the students are doing here, age 16. So it just shows how we've dumbed down our education system. And children maybe don't want to learn, and part of that is because we're not really presenting them with something really exciting.
I agree 100%. The most important thing for us to do is to have teachers there who see things from a very holistic perspective, see everything as an extension of something else, and but are enthused, be it language, be it biology, be it, I don't know, geology or whatever. And, I mean, maths, I mean, Pythagorean maths is fantastic. Geometry is wonderful. What a magnificent science geometry is, and there's so much more.
Well, I wonder sometimes about health, because, you know, it's, oh, put that dirty stone down, or, you know, and then, in fact, it's probably really interesting, and you could think about what it's made from, what the story was from that stone, did it come down a river, all of these things, and then you find the skeleton of a leaf. Oh, dirty old leaf. But look at the skeleton. Look how it's made. Do you know what goes through the veins of that leaf? These are the sorts of things that get set aside because things are labelled as dirty.
Yes, we've got to get in with our hands and get some dirt under our fingernails.
And of course that's what grounds us and connects us back with the earth.
And also builds up our immune system. Really important. And so, yes, I told them about how the Maori woman of yesteryear used to hold their baby and rock the baby to sleep and tell of the whakapapa, the genealogy. And so that by the time the baby's 4 years of age, they can go back to the 14th century to their particular waka, or their canoe, and recite all the lineage. And this gives you connection. He was impressed with that.
Yes.
Very impressed. And it does. It allows us to become embedded. And this is where Maori, of course, you mentioned Papatūānuku, Mother Earth, and they jump to it straight away, which, of course, then leads me to the EcoFest. And so I had to drive about 2 hours to a place called Eski.
And this is after you left the Dolmens.
After the Dolmens, that's right. And to the Eco Festival. And on the way, it was really interesting because I was still, shall we say, clear in my mind. And we'd been driving along the road, and I thought to myself, gee, I've been driving here 1.5 hours, and I haven't seen one Coca-Cola ad. And guess what? Within 10 seconds, I'd come to a big beach umbrella outside a shop and had Coca-Cola on it. And I thought, oh, I wonder how that came. And then I thought, we haven't also come across any of these ubiquitous orange cones on the road that the transport department here have their millions all over New Zealand roads, making huge amounts of money for the corporation who puts them out. And guess what? Within, again, about 1 kilometre, there came the cones. And so I thought to myself, I wonder if my mind is so clear that I'm actually just picking up the stuff as I drive towards it. I don't know, but it was just an interesting thing.
Tim's sonar.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. My ears were a high. And so I get to this place, and it's called Kin's Domain, where I was going to stay. It's about 500 hectares of land. Beautiful land, sloping land, sort of what you'd call maybe downs in England. And 400 families have come together, and they'd had about 1.25 or 1 hectare of land each, and they were all building their own homes anyhow or any way they could, because for some unknown reason they still haven't got building codes in this particular region of Russia. And so anybody who's got any ideas about anything different can actually go ahead and do it. So I went and stayed on this land with a family. And it was really interesting because they'd given me a little hut in which to live. It was nicely appointed. And when I went in there, and I thought, oh, I want to photograph this, I had a deja vu. And I thought to myself, ah, yes, I'm supposed to be here. I dreamt this. Amazing. And so I stayed in this little place. And he was an ex-navigator in the Russian Navy.
What, the owner?
The owner, yes. Mm-hmm. He came out to me and said, hello, Tim, my name is Victor. I instantly knew that I'll have a very good friendship with this man. And his wife, Irina, what a lovely girl. She's got a degree in industrial ecology. And so I stayed with them for a number of days.
And was that the place that I think that you said was a little bit cold showers and a little bit basic?
A little bit basic? Well, yes, but very warm in the house and good food. There's lots of heaps of mulberries.
Wonderful.
Heaps of mulberries grew on trees all over the place. Wild cherries as well. And the currants and the blueberries were coming on and the plums were coming on. But I would have left by the time they came. But anyway, all the people at this particular land area of 500 hectares called Kin's Domain. Kin, all humans are kin, we're all part of one sort of larger family. They had their eco festival up the road, and it was something that I thought was going to be a big event with people coming from all over the place. It wasn't. It was just the people from that area. And they all knew each other.
It was arranged by Uri, was it, for you?
No, yeah, it was arranged for me to go, but they have this every year. They have a wonderful stage, and everything is done. It was done over 7 days, and the last day was the 20th, and the next day was the 21st, was summer solstice, so we had a special day that day as well. But everything was based around coming together in a circle and holding hands. And if you are okay with being very close with people, fortunately I've been to dances of universal peace both up in Hawaii and here in New Zealand. And so I was used to people being in close and holding hands and dancing and singing. And what it is that they move amongst each other all the time, so your auras are always touching. And this is something that I found was akin to sort of group soul coming together. And the other thing is the Russian people always linger at holding your gaze. They want to look deeper into your eyes at your being. And I thought this was good. Very good.
Right, because if you have eye contact, you have real contact, don't you?
Very true, because again, the whole Anastasia books is based on that, the soul. We are all basically spiritual beings having a physical plane experience on Earth. And she maintains that we need to feel out our soul. And so in communicating with a lot of these Russian people, and I had a very poor grasp of the Russian language. The Russian language is a very difficult language to be able to remember. And because I had gone with the idea of being mindless so that I could just experience in the moment, morning after morning after morning I'd wake up and I'd be so clear, and then I'd think, oh gosh, I'd get up and I'd go outside, and then I'd think, oh gee, I can't remember the words for hello and how are you, etc. And I'd have to go back and get a piece of paper and I'd written it out. True. It was amazing that I couldn't remember just Dobri den or Dobri utra. Dobri utra is good morning. Dobri den is good day. And Privet is a friendly way, like g'day or hi. And so, yeah, all these little things.
Well, of course, the human brain is programmed for learning language at a rather earlier age than you and I are now existing, Tim.
Thank you for that excuse. I'll run with that. Yes. And so the whole event was premised around ecology, inner ecology, as well as external ecology.
And can you explain, first of all, a little bit on the external ecology, and then tell us about inner ecology?
Well, we had 7 days, and so we started on a Sunday, so the sun, started off of the sun. The next day was Monday, we started off of the moon. And then you go through the minor planets, and we ended up on Saturday, which is Saturn Day. And so each day was a special day, and they'd put up a picture of that planet up on the stage.
So do they have the same words? I mean, like Sunday being for the sun for us and Monday for the moon for us. Are they the same ones in Russia?
There are some words that are similar, most definitely. I can't remember them all now, as it is, but if I had done a little bit, I've written a little bit more up, I could say that there are a few words that are the same. Jupiter is Jupiter, and Venus is Venus, something like that. So there is a connection. Anyway, we also, each day we had a colour, and they'd put a colour up on the flag, and they really liked their flag. The flag is, starting from the bottom, is red, blue, and white. That's the Russian flag, and I look at it and I think, well, what does it mean? And intuitively I think, red is for the blood and earth, blue is for the blue sky, and white is for the purity of heaven. And I think that could be part of how they see things. Anyway, we had 3 vegetarian meals a day, and they were all free, and we all ate together, and the chefess happened to be the woman who was Victor's wife, where I was staying at. Lovely, lovely person. Irina. And we would have singing in the morning. We start off with a circle, And then we'd do all sorts of group things. And one of the group things we did do was one day is we split up into small groups and we had to do team building. And wow, what a day that was. It was fantastic. We had to go up on the stage and get on a table and put our hands on our chest and then fall over backwards off table, off the stage, and we were down underneath and there would be seven people holding out our hands, and you had to make sure that you held the weight, and there were some heavy ones. They even had to catch me as well. And there was an interesting man there, and I turned around to him after a while because he was testing us all the time. We'd be watching up there for this person to fall, and he would quickly come from behind us and push our hands down to see that we were holding steadily. And I asked him if he was a military man, and he was. And I could tell he was a military man. He was disciplined, but there was something in him that I could see was really good. He might have been a sergeant and took care of his platoon. And, you know, a good warrior, it doesn't matter in what army, a good warrior is a good warrior because they all take care of their men. And that's their destiny in that particular life, to honour the code and be what I would call a honourable person. And anyway, we also had a situation now. This is interesting because we all had to lie down and then we'd have six people around us and we'd have to put our fingers, hold our forefingers and index fingers and put them underneath the body of a person lying down. And at a particular command, we all lift them. And we all lifted from the ground and lifted our whole body right up above our heads. And what an experience that was.
With just two fingers, how many?
Seven people.
Got two hands for each person. Yes. How many people?
Seven people.
Seven, that's a bit sort of, was one at the head?
Yeah, one at the head.
And three down each side?
Yes.
Okay, and that many people with two fingers can lift a whole body?
Yeah. Oh boy, I'll tell you what, when they put me there, I just went straight up. And one of the girls turned around to me, she said, "Tim, first time now that you've been in a Russian space project where we took it up into space." And wow, it's like a rocket ride.
Well, it sounds a little bit like how they must have moved on them.
Well, you see, this is... Yes, but we had to work time and time again to be able to go through sorts of obstacle courses, but we had to depend on each other all the time, and we were all very in close. You'd be in a situation where we all had to stand on a pallet, and there was maybe about 17 of us all standing on a little pallet holding on to each other, and we had to get onto that pallet and then get off that pallet and walk on some branches to get to the other end, and we all had to hold each other. And then we had a situation where they had string and they made sort of cobwebs, and we had to be carried through these cobwebs and we weren't allowed to touch the cobweb. And some of us stripped down to our skin and underwear to get through it. And here were girls carrying us through many, many wonderful things for team building. And at the end, we would all cheer. And I remember one of the saying was, "Commander Katova," which means, "Team, are you ready?" And "Commander Katova." And so it was just wonderful for them to all get into this team spirit. And it just continued time and time again. We had a situation there where we were given a lot of tools. The men had to go away and make some seats and some stools, and the woman went and worked together and made little angels. And these angels were made out of cloth, and I was given one too by my little... Everyone had an angel to take care of.
Right.
And I had somebody looking towards me, and it just happened to be a little 13-year-old girl, lovely girl, and I can remember her name very easily because Pele Gaia. And I know that Madame Pele is the volcanic goddess in Hawaii, and then Gaia was Gaia for Mother Earth. So Pele Gaia, even though the interpretation for her was totally different, it allowed me to remember her name, which is really good. And so we had so many wonderful things. They were going all the time.
How many days was the festival?
It was 7 days.
Seven days.
And yes, we had cold showers, but the days were just blue skies and most days, and then it would build up, and quite often we'd have thunder and lightning. And then the rain would come and then go. And at night time, we had everybody on stage, and they were singing and dancing. The Russians love dancing. And I realized that what we in New Zealand don't have, they have a vast repository in which to draw songs from. And they were singing, always singing. And the more you sing, and you know, because you're part of a choir, it opens our chest cavity, it yes. opens our heart. And if we are singing for the betterment of the whole, and we're even in the form of love and blessings to what is, you really drop into it, don't you? You sing your heart out, for want of a better word. Well, this happened on stage night after night after night. And one night, I was too tired. I went to bed early. And I was lying there, and I could hear them singing there, and wonderful, and oh, I couldn't drag my body out. And then I heard them clapping, and bravo, bravo. And I thought, gee, what's going on here? The Russians use the word bravo. It's an Italian word, but for some unknown reason, it's managed to get away and it's incorporated in the Russian language. And I heard an Enya song, so I decided I'll get out of bed and have a look. And I thought, well, okay, I'll go over. And I walked around and to the stage, and there were 10 women, and they were all dressed immaculately in white, and they wore yellow sequined capes, and in their hands, flasks in their hand with candles in, and they were moving to this music, and they were doing these hand movements right over the stage and around the stage, and the more they did it, the more, I don't know, something happened. All of a sudden, I found myself in a field or in a space that just felt magic. It's like something descended over me, a whole energy, and I went into sort of an ecstatic state. And the state just was so incredibly loving and profound. It was as if I could feel and see particles all around me. It was quite wild that when the girls came off the stage, they went and stood with their family. And there was 10 of them, and there was 10 family groups around them. And one of the family would hold the candles well above them, and they'd hug each other. And I was still in this ecstatic state, so I went from one to the other, and I was hugging them and saying, magic, 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 thank you, thank you, thank you. It was all lovely. And they knew, and they hugged me because they realized that I had plugged in to this field unknowingly. And this was just part of what happened in Russia. Russia is a place of magic, and if we are open to it, all sorts of things can happen. And what the World News Service is saying about Russia is a gross distortion. It is extremely untruthful in so many ways, because Russia at the moment is wanting its own sovereignty. And Putin has kicked out all the money boys. He's kicked out the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, basically out of Russia, because they were going to exploit it. And all the Russian people want is for him to secure the borders so that they can find their soulmate and live in harmony with each other and grow things in nature and become a unified field of love and contentment.
That is absolutely beautiful. And Tim, if there's any way that we can bring that to somewhere in New Zealand, it would be just magical. I'm going to have to stop the interview now. You've had so much to tell us, and it's been absolutely lovely and fascinating. Maybe we should have another interview another time to talk some more. But thank you so much, and kia ora.
Spasibo, Lisa, and kia ora. And I thank you so much too. Don't go away. Stay listening. I've got some really interesting information to share with you. Well, I just want to be able to tell you a little bit more about this trip. It was something that was quite extraordinary. I had other unique experiences too that I haven't expressed here in this interview. But I would like to be able to tell you one thing, is that the Russian people that I found were very, very optimistic. They believed that they could actually start to shape and create their future. And I found out that virtually every one of them, the adults anyway, at this place had read the Anastasia books, which obviously set some sort of template for them to be able to go ahead and look to creating and shaping a future for their loved ones and their children, and to be able to go back to the land and live totally in relationship to all of nature, realizing, of course, that we are embedded in the biosphere, within the web of life, And it is crucial for us as a humanity to make the connection that we share the same breath. This is really important because the breath is invisible, and yet it goes right down into our lungs, into our alveoli, then carried by the hemoglobin as oxyhemoglobin to our heart. And it's pumped through our body, it replenishes our body, and then after this process we breathe it out as CO2, where again our planet takes it into its system. It's sequestered either into the oceans where plankton take it up, or into all trees and vegetation, which then releases oxygen to allow us again to breathe. So the Russians have this understanding of connection, and because they are a spiritual nation, of the holy breath, knowing the breath that connects us. The Russians that I was with have a special relationship with nature. And to get back to the dolmens also, very interesting, because just today I realized that I hadn't mentioned one of the interesting things about the dolmens, about sealing away the wise people and have them leave all their subtle bodies, but only their soul escaping supposedly through the dolmen to go into the universe. I have been told that this was one way to break free of the wheel of reincarnation, or the cycle of reincarnation. Ah, interesting. Because prior to the Jewish religion, most of the other religions in the world, from Hinduism, Taoism, Buddhism, to American Indian, to ancient Greek, believed in cycles. They believed in the circle of life. And just like water goes to the sky, becomes ice, becomes liquid, everything has a cycle. And we are in a universe of cycles. And from the information that when you study most of the world's religions outside the three mono religions that are spawned by Judeo-Christian Islam, virtually all the other cosmologies, other than Maori, believe in life after life after life in a cycle of reincarnation. And going into the dolmens, that was supposedly one way of being able to break free of this particular system of cycle. I mean, we don't know all the answers, do we? Have a wonder about this. Henry Ford believed in reincarnation. John Paul Getty, the so-called the richest man in the world in the 1960s, believed he was Roman Emperor Hadrian of Hadrian's Wall. There are many famous people who believe in the cycle of the soul. It's one way to grow up, one way to learn every situation on earth. So worth having a look at. All you have to do is go up on the internet and do a search on who have had other lives or reincarnation. Famous people who have believed in reincarnation. They just believe, or just past lives. Not that I'm wanting to push a trip on you, but I'm wanting you to be able to at least take this in. Look at the cycles in nature. There are zillions of stories within nature. Butterfly stories. And something else. I found this today. I was just doing a quick edit of this particular show, and I was getting some pictures of the dolmens when a news item came out on the 1st of June of this year. And of course, I landed in Russia on the 28th of May. It says the dolmens of the Caucasus in Russia have been deciphered. And these megalithic sites basically are a map representation of part of our galaxy, to the degree that there are the signs of Gemini and the signs of Taurus that are reflected in the placement of all these dolmens across this area in Russia. So in actual fact, it is a physical manifestation or template of the heavens of all the star systems in that part of the so-called constellations. And the Pleiades are there as well. So there's many, many, many interesting, shall we say, key codes that have been opening up right at the moment, because we are on the threshold of change on this planet. We definitely are taking a leap into the next paradigm where we are going to understand our place and time on our home planet Earth. So I'm just wanting to convey that to you, that what is happening in Russia, what is happening within ourselves, has to be such that in sharing breath, we are all connected as a global family, or as they say, as kin. And the imperative is for us to clean up our inner game so that we can meet change head on in our heart. So go up and have a look at the dolmens. And the other person who helped me a lot with organizing the tour was Yuri Smirnov. His website is spaceoflove.com/dolm, D-O-L-M, tour.htm, or contact me. Email radaryu, radaryu, at gmail.com. You can listen on planetaudio.org.nz/greenplanet for the next 7 days, or you can iPod and stream, can be obtained 6 hours after broadcasting on greenplanetfm.com and holisticliving.co.nz/greenplanetfm.